Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pod of Thunder and Rock and Roll, and we are all about the rock and roll today on the final episode of Talk is Jericho for 2022. Talking about the hottest tour in rock and roll right now. It just got underway at the beginning of the month in Mexico. And if you haven't guessed yet, I'm talking about Pantera. My longtime friend and Talk is Jericho alumni multiple times. He was just on a few weeks ago with the Godfather versus Goodfellas classic movie clash. Charlie Benanti returns to give a behind the scenes look at how this incredible event came together. So if you don't know, Charlie and Zach Wilde have joined Pantera singer Phil Anselmo and bass player Rex Brown for a celebration of Pantera, which is going to go all throughout 2023, including a bunch of dates opening for Metallica in the stadiums next year. Charlie's telling the whole story of the band, the concept of the band, how it came together in vivid detail from when he was first approached about it, how he told the Anthrax guys, and then what he did to learn the songs to ensure he was playing them in true Vinnie Paul style. Charlie talks about his first rehearsals with Pantera, his favorite licks, the hardest drum fills, and how different the drumming is for Pantera versus what he does in Anthrax. He shares all the ways he and the band are paying tribute to the Abbott brothers, to Vinnie and Dime, from the stage and drum design to what they wear on stage to the last thing they do before they hit the stage each night of the tour. He even reveals the two very personal items from Vinnie Paul and Dime that he has with him on stage for every show. Charlie shares some great stories and memories of Daryl and Vinny from the first time he met them to the last time he saw them both. We talk about the Van Halen influence on Pantera and on Dime and Vinny specifically, and Charlie even tells an unbelievable story about what Eddie Van Halen did at Dime's funeral. It's an amazing conversation, but before we get into the celebration of Pantera, still cabins left for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Just go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com. You're not going to want to miss it either. We have so many events and great talent and so much happening on the ship. Three-quarters of the AEW roster will be there, I feel. It might be your one and only time to see the Jericho Housen tag team. That's right, Jericho and Danhausen versus the Guns. One night only on the Jericho Cruise. The first ever Oceanic champion will be crowned. Moose, Cheeseburger, Matt Cardona, and Dante Martin will battle it out to see who takes on Flip Gordon for the title. We got comedy and music on the ship. Fozzy's doing three shows. I'll be doing live podcasts. Dave Schrader of the Paranormal 60 will be hosting the paranormal experiences that he always shares on board, which is a huge hit. Leaving from Miami to Great Stirrup Cay, February 2nd. Come hang with us. Book your cabin now at ChrisJerichoCruise.com. All right, let's get going with Charlie Benanti and the story of the new incarnation of Pantera and their first tour in 21 years right here, right now on Talk is Jericho. Well, last time I saw Charlie Benanti was on the streets of San Diego at Comic-Con for about 10 minutes or so. Because you were off to do some Anthrax, I think, writing and recording.
No, we were starting a tour.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You were starting a tour. But it was just like two ships of the night. We crossed paths. But we talk quite often.
Yeah.
Pretty much on a daily basis. And especially about this current project that you're doing. Of course, the Pantera celebration, Pantera 2.0. And it is causing a huge, huge buzz in the metal world. But this is something that's been going on. I think I remember you telling me about this maybe almost a year ago, 8 months ago, something like that.
Yeah, there was talk about it. I had found out towards the end of December, maybe it was the beginning of January, when Philip called me up. And I immediately said, yep, I want to do it. It just felt right.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason. You know, with Daryl and Vinny being gone, I myself missed these songs. You know what I mean? You know, you could listen to them all you want, but I think having them being performed, you know, in front of you and being performed like the right way, it really resonated with a lot of people once they really found out that this was going to happen, you know?
One of the things that you know, you get diehard fans at first. There's still people that complain that Ace Frehley's not in Kiss, right?
Yeah.
And there's people that complain that Steve Perry's not in Journey, for example. This is a completely different vibe because this is like when Bon Scott passes away. Either you get another singer and the songs continue or they disappear forever, right?
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I liked about what you just said is that like the songs are everything. And to not have those songs in the world was a drag for so long, you know?
Yeah.
When you get together again to play, now the songs are alive and the songs belong more to the fans than to the actual band and the members of the band themselves.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the thing about it that really hit me the hardest was that, you know, we always joke about if the Beatles, if John and George had still been here, would there have been a reunion? And I think the first thing I said was it probably would have been at the first Live Aid.
Right.
The thing about Vinny and Dime not being here anymore, and Philip and Rex are here. And I think those guys felt, I want to go play my songs again too, you know?
Mm.
And I know that there's the diehard fans who have their issues with it. But for me and Zach, we're just honoring our friends, to be honest with you. That's what we're doing. And that's it. I enjoy playing these songs. When I look down at the set list and I see the next song coming, man, I get so excited. So for me, it's so great to be doing this and seeing the reaction. I mean, you saw the videos. I mean, the people are just loving it. So why would you even be so negative about something when you see how much fun people are having and the joy that it's bringing?
I think that that's one of those things that I'm sure that anybody that had those reservations at first, they're probably not having them now because you see, like you said, like you couldn't have picked a better place to start than, you know, South America and Mexico. And like you look at the gig you just had, I think it was Santiago, Chile, maybe. Was it Chile that you guys were just at?
Yeah.
And the whole floor is just like, bah, bah, bah. And it's like, it's very rare to have a band that can create those types of emotions. And even more rare when there's a band like Pantera where you haven't been able to play those songs, like you mentioned, live for 20 years. It's a rebirth.
I know. We couldn't even hear ourselves. That's how loud it was. It was so loud. This thing just came over. It was like I've said this with Anthrax too when we've come down here, that sometimes you just want to stop playing and just take it all in, you know? And that's one thing that the fans in Chile, you didn't see a lot of this. You know,
right.
You just saw them in the moment enjoying it, you know, and that was one thing that I was just applauding.
Yeah, that's like Charlie just said, you didn't see a lot of people holding up their phones, which you're totally right about that. And like it's I remember Sting said when the Police reunited and they were having a little bit of issues at first with Stewart and Sting, and then they got over it and they said, you know, we realize now these songs don't belong to us anymore. They belong to the fans. Yeah. You can really see that coming through, like the spirit of these songs, the spirit of the brothers of Dime and Vinny. I didn't know Dime at all. Obviously, you were very close to him, but Vinny was one of my best friends.
I know.
I went through it with Vinny a couple times where, you know, like, you know, there's always little issues and animosity. But I think now, and I'm sure Dime, and you can kind of tell me what you think, I think they'd be like, you know what, this is pretty fucking cool. That our life's work will now live on and make people happy, which is what Vinny was all about. I'm sure Dime was the same, but Vinny's always cooking at his bus and come on over, 1-2 barbecue, come over to my house, let's have a shot, let's have some fun. This is fun. This is what Vinny and I'm assuming Dime as well were all about.
Well, exactly. And like to use the word celebration, I think that's the most accurate word you could use for this thing because it is a celebration of the music and the vibe that these guys created. I mean, like you said, Vinny and Dime would be all for it. And I know there were issues with those guys in the past, but man, it's 2022 now.
Mm-hmm.
Can't hold on to grudges all your life. You got to let shit go. And you have to just say, I'm going to enjoy this. I want to hear Cowboys from Hell again. I want to hear I'm Broken. That's it. Just come out and celebrate it. And I did say something about 2 or 3 weeks ago about how I thought it was disrespectful for people to say the things that they were saying, because I felt that Vinny and Dime, if it was the opposite way, they would be probably doing this too, because they want their music to live on.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing, because there's two generations never have seen Pantera. And this isn't the Pantera that started this whole thing. Yes, it's Philip and Rex, and it's myself and Zach who are filling in for Daryl and Vinny. And we're just trying to play these songs as best as we possibly could play them.
And it works. You know, once again, there's a lot of examples of that. One other one that pops in my head is Queen with Adam Lambert. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, he's not Freddie. Well, no, he's not Freddie. And Freddie's not here anymore. But it's a pretty damn good representation of Freddie Mercury. And you go to the gig and you love the tunes and you love what's going on. So, and I said that we talked about this. You and Zach are the perfect guys for this. I mean, I'm sure other guys could have done it. But as soon as you mentioned that to me, like, dude, like even that, the lineage and the personal relationships. And then, of course, from a playing standpoint, it really is a perfect mix. Who originally asked you to do this?
Philip called me. I mean, we always talk. So it wasn't like I don't hear from Philip. Like, we would always talk. And then after I talked to him, Rex called me up and he's like, did you speak to Philip? I'm like, yeah. And we were all happy about it because we go way back. First time I met these guys was like 1985. Not with Philip, of course, but Philip came in later. But we've always been friends.
Before you continue, where did you meet them in 85? Tell us the story when you first met the guys.
Oh, Anthrax played a place in Houston called Cardi's. It was us and a band called Hellstar, and Pantera were the openers. And that's when we first met. I mean, they were a different band back then, but I'll never forget that night, because when we went on, there was like this huge pole in the club, and Daryl had climbed all the way up and was hanging off of it, and he was just headbanging all night, and it just made a mark, you know what I mean? And then we kind of always kept in contact, so that's how far we go back. This is a very emotional thing for all of us, and you know, the first night, Sterling Whitfield, he came to the Mexico City show, and he brought me Daryl's wristband that he still had, that Daryl wore and never been washed. And he brought me a pair of Vinny's old gloves, still had blood on them. Every night since that, I put Vinny's glove in my pocket and I wear Dime's wristband. And I play every show with those. And it's just something that, I don't know, I feel closer to them when I do it, you know?
It's a connection for sure.
100%. And I was so, like when he brought it, he's like, I want you to have these. It was weird, man. It was like, you know, I'm not going to say I didn't get choked up about it, but because I did. I'm so grateful that he was there. And the whole thing was just awesome.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
When you were, there's so many questions to ask, but when you're talking about, you know, accepting this gig, what's your number one priority? To honor Vinny and as a player? Are you playing his parts to a T? Like, how do you incorporate Charlie Benanti's drum playing into Vinny's playing?
So I had this conversation with John Five, because he was calling me about it. You know, what are you going to do? How are you going to approach it? And I told him exactly what I was going to do. I'm going to approach it like Vinny would play. So I don't play the way I would play with Anthrax. You know, the drum configuration is different. It's the way Vinny played, because I felt if I set up the kit like that, then I would play like that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'd have these two Chinas up here, the two Big Toms here, and I would play like that. And then Sterling, again, to mention Sterling.
Is that his drum tech? Is Sterling his drum tech?
No, Sterling was, he engineered a lot of the last few records.
Gotcha.
And he was their guy. And Sterling made me samples of Vinny's tones from Vulgar and then Far Beyond Driven. And then I put those sounds into my Roland brain and I'm triggering those sounds. So when you hear them, those are Vinny's tones coming out.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Because I wanted it to sound like Pantera. I didn't want it to sound like, you know, me playing Vinny's parts. I wanted it to sound like me playing the tones that Vinny played, you know? So it had to sound like Pantera. It had to make the hair on your arm stand up. That's the only way I can describe. And the first rehearsal, when I started playing, I could tell the other guys were like, that sounds like Vinny, you know? I knew right from there that it was going to be great. And that's how I approached it. And I really did a lot of homework too, studying little things that he would do, these little nuances that maybe the general public maybe wouldn't pick up on it, but those diehard Pantera fans and drummers would kind of go, oh, that's it. You know, so I just wanted to do that because there's been many times when I'll go see a band who there's a replacement in the band and the guy doesn't do his homework. And it's kind of lets me down a bit, you know, mm-hmm. Like if you're going to accept it, do it.
Give me an example of something, a little nuance that you had to really study.
Oh, there's a fill in the song Walk when it's like button. And he does it leads with his left hand, where I would have led with my right hand. But when I lead it with my left, it all makes sense to me. So now when I play it live, it's always a fill that I enjoy doing because it's different. It's a little bit of a challenge. So there's that stuff. There's Vinny's triplets that he would always put in. He had a style of playing that was very Vinny Paul. Just a lot of just these triplets that he would put in. And it was like, it's so important to each song, especially the parts in Mouthful War. You got to hit these. Oh, man, I don't know. Me and Rex, we kind of locked in right from the beginning. And even on stage, when we're playing together, we're looking at each other, just like we have this connection. So I was so happy about that.
Well, it's so important too. Like for example, when Chris Slade got brought into AC/DC, and it was actually Stevie Young too, because Malcolm, I think, had passed away at that point. Angus had them rehearsing for like 3 months straight of just the three of them, just working on that tightness and that connection. Because Pantera is such a groove heavy band. Was there rehearsals with just you and Rex at first, or like how did you? Yeah. Did you guys just sit there for a few hours, just play bass and drums, or how did that work?
The first rehearsals were just me, Rex, and Philip, and then we had Philip's friend fill in on guitar. But for the most part, it was just so that actually Rex and I can kind of lock in. Mm-hmm. I had to, every time I think I'm playing it slow, I'm not. Mm-hmm. I have to play it even slower than I think. Now, when I start the song, man, it's just like down. You just got to pull it back a little bit. Like Vinny, I felt played a little bit behind. So that's what I try to do with them, especially the song Cowboys from Hell. That's my favorite groove. Just when it kicks in, it's just got to be right. And I know where it sits now. So when Rex gives me a look, I know it's good. It's grooving.
And I think a lot of people that aren't in bands don't understand how important that is your rhythm section locking in together. I mean, that's everything.
That's everything, man. You don't realize it, but it's the thing that makes you move out there. It's that rhythm section, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, you mentioned Chris Slade, but there was another drummer before him that replaced Phil Rudd, you know?
Simon Wright?
Simon Wright. Yeah. And I always thought Simon Wright did a really great job with AC/DC. And I love those records that he's on too.
Be like Flick of the Switch and Fly on the Wall. I love Fly on the Wall. I think that's a great underrated DC. The production's not great, but the songs are awesome.
Yeah. Same with Flick of the Switch. I thought Shake Your Foundations, I think, is on that record.
Yeah. Guns for Hire.
Guns for Hire. Just some good shit, you know.
Now, what's the difference in, like, obviously with Anthrax, you've been playing with Frankie Bello as your bass player for, you know, 30 or 40 years now almost. What's the difference in playing with Rex than when you're playing with Frankie? Is that kind of more of the groove element than a thrash element, or is there, what is it?
The difference is with Anthrax, I play more with Scott.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Scott and I kind of lock in more than I locked in with Frankie because of, man, me and Scott are just, he's fast picking and I'm right with him, you know, doing, you know, 30 second notes. And it was more the thrash element. So Scott, if Scott was playing, I was playing, you know, like that.
Right.
But with Pantera, it's a little bit different. And it's weird because there's only one guitar player in Pantera, but God, he sounds like two at times, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm more locked into what me and Rex are doing. And even Philip triggers a lot of things for me too. Like with Anthrax, I don't have any vocals in my ears, but with Pantera, I have Philip in my ear.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's very interesting because that's the one thing I said, wow, I think I may have to put Philip in my ears because I do follow his kind of lead sometimes too. So for me, it was a total learning experience during rehearsal. I can't just rely on just having guitar and bass. I need some of Philip too. And now he's in there. Like even with Hostile, he counts that off. There's sometimes Philip triggers parts like in Strength Beyond Strength. You know, he's like, can't stop it. And I follow his, the way he sings sometimes helps me to kind of groove the song too.
He sings very rhythmically. Even when, like you mentioned Cowboys from Hell, when it's like, out of the darkness, like that's, he's singing the part the way that I just played that drum part. I probably wasn't right, but it's like, you know, there's a connection, isn't there?
Exactly. And like, I follow like 5 minutes alone. So that's what I say. I hear him and I kind of follow that groove, you know?
Yeah, it's almost like a rap type of an element. He's almost like rapping with his vocal, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about playing with Zakk Wylde. You mentioned, you know, it's one guitar, but he sounds like two. And this is one of the greatest guitar players of all time. And the thing I loved about Zakk being involved is, of course, he, you know, I remember the famous cover of Guitar World magazine where it's him and Dime wearing war paint and whatever the f- they seemed like they were two peas in a pod, you know? So once again, from a personal standpoint, he's the guy. And from a playing standpoint, he sounds like Zakk Wylde. You can't change that. But he's really can making these parts into his own. It sounds great. And obviously he's got the right vibe for it. But how is it playing with him and going from a two guitar band to a one guitar band with such a dominant guitar hero, so to speak?
I love playing with Zakk, both on stage and off stage. He is someone who I could just sit down and just, boom, we just start talking. And, or I should say, Zakk starts talking.
You just listen. Yeah. But that's good though, because you're a quiet man, so it's a good mix.
I enjoy listening to Zakk, and Zakk always hits me, he'll always hit me with something like, all right, Charlie, you got to bring two records with you to the island. Do you bring Zeppelin 4 or do you bring Fair Warning? You know, and I'm just like, Jesus, what if I get this wrong? You know what I mean? So I say Fair Warning and he's like, oh man, more variety on Zeppelin 4. You know, this is every day with Zakk.
I used to love those conversations. Okay. It's you, me, Nikki Six, Isaac, the bartender from Love Boat, and Charo. And we're stuck on a desert island. All right, what do you get Charo to do? What does Isaac the bartender do?
I love it. It's like he just comes up with these things. And it's like, but playing with him, when I see Zakk out there, man, I kind of feed off of him too because he's so into it and I enjoy it. And then he'll come around, he'll come up to the riser and we'll, you know, just give the look and we'll play. And then if we both like hit something at the same time, we just feel it. After the song, he comes over and he'll pump me. I got that. You know, we make that connection. I think Zakk's playing great. It's Zakk doing Dime, but he also throws in a lot of the elements of the leads too. You know, he'll hit certain parts that are like, oh, there you go. So for me, it's great. And I think it's a really great band. And we're only getting better.
Well, that's the thing. And you guys are just starting. Like you mentioned, it's been six gigs or whatever. and you know this because we went through it when we did, you know, the Metal Allegiance shows. You know, sometimes you put together super groups and there's not that there's not chemistry, but to get that real chemistry locked in, was that something that might that worried you at first? Like, this is an all-star group. Did you think, what if it doesn't connect from a chemical level?
Maybe a little bit, but it started to, I mean, we had like 2 weeks of rehearsing down in New Orleans, and by the end of it, I felt very confident in everybody. Mm-hmm. I have my whole list of songs that I want to add, and I still have my list of songs that I want to add, because I think it's important to the diehard fans that when they come to see it, yes, you're going to hear the hits, but can we throw two of those deep cuts, like Use My Third Arm,
yeah,
Yesterday Don't Mean Shit, and Suicide No Part Two, oh, you know, just like all these deep cuts so that people, the diehard fans go, yes, I want to hear those songs too. Even though 60, 70% like the songs, those 30% of the people are so happy that they walk out of there going, they played Use My Third Arm. That was so awesome, you know? So, because that to me, that I'm a diehard fan, so I want to hear those deep cuts too.
Well, it's like any, you know, it's like we go to an Anthrax gig and you guys pull out like a Metal Thrash and Mad or something like that, or, you know, whatever it may be. It's like, oh, that's all, oh, they played Metal Thrash and Mad. You want that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So if you go see, I mean, we talk about all these things that we love, going to see Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
And he'll do something like Your Mother Should Know, and we'll be like, oh my God.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's one of those grandfather songs, you know?
But that makes it special. And the thing about Pantera too, they're one of those bands that are so massive, but there's only five albums. You know, that's it. So you pretty much have 10 hits, but it's not like the Beatles that have 40 or 50 hits. I mean, you pretty much have to pull a couple of those out to make a full set.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we play the songs, of course, that the masses, they want to hear these songs, you know, This Love, you know, Broken, Walk, of course. Walk is probably the biggest song of the night.
Yeah.
Down here, at least, you know. It's been so crazy. So you mentioned something about what a great way to start it down here. Yes, because they are so passionate about their metal down here. Perfect place. And I can't talk enough about the fans here. They're just the greatest. When they come, and they don't hold anything back. They just kind of say, this is it. You're going to play it for 90 minutes, or I'm going to give you 90 minutes of pure energy.
It's almost like, you know, and we know this from being on tour, but never mind starting a whole new band. The first couple gigs are always a little bit like, you know, you got to get work the kinks out of the system. But when you're playing in front of, you know, the fans in Mexico, they're not going to hear any kinks. They're just hearing fucking Pantera. So even as a player, I'm sure, like after your first gig, I think you said, oh, there's a couple of things I didn't do perfect or whatever.
Yeah.
No one's noticing. It's the perfect place for it.
I know. And that was it. And once those three or four songs were done, man, then I was just on autopilot. Then I just enjoyed myself, you know,
mm-hmm.
Which is something, you know, like I know other band members, musicians can understand this. And I called it kind of metal meditation, where I'm up there and sometimes I forget where I am because I'm just lost in it. And I think you know what I mean? There's been mm-hmm. There's shows like that where you just like, oh shit, I'm back.
Yeah.
Because you just went somewhere else and it's like meditating. There's been many times during these shows when it's happened to me. I'm just closing my eyes and I'm just somewhere else.
Well, that means that you really know the tunes and you're feeling the groove. And it's not, I'm not saying it's in a bad way. When you don't quite know a song live, like for me, I got to really concentrate on the lyric, what's coming up next, how does this go? When you play a song that you really know, that's when you start kind of drifting off to like, oh, I got to do some laundry later on or something like that.
Like, where am I going to eat?
Yeah, exactly.
Where am I eating later?
And that's not a bad thing. You're still into it, but now like you're enjoying the moment. Like, oh, you know, it does kind of get to a different level. Like you mentioned, the meditation part.
Exactly. And I can only equate it to like a baseball player or a basketball player when they're in their zone and they're just give me the ball and just let me go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way it's been a lot of times playing these songs. And knowing where my kit is, knowing everything, and now I'm kind of comfortable with it, and I could just close my eyes and go where I need to go.
Let's talk about that first night. It was Mexico. It was Mexico, but was it like Toluca or something like that?
Toluca.
So talk about kind of like, give me the how you were feeling, you know, that day, 10 minutes before the show, because you had a big intro, you got the big curtain. Like, give us a little bit of that. Because, listen, you've been in Anthrax for 40 years. You've been one of the most critically acclaimed drummers for just as long. But this is a whole new thing. Was it almost like going back to your first gig at L'Amour in 1982 or something?
Exactly how I felt. I was so nervous. And before the show, well, during rehearsals, me and Grady were talking about, you know, we're going to have to do a shot or two before the show because I need to take the edge off. And it's exactly what we did. But it was more for Daryl and Vinny. Like, we had to do a shot, a Black Tooth, you know, because it was just so symbolic of the whole thing. Usually we would do one before the show. And then right before the Planet Caravan, I walk off and Grady's right there waiting for another shot. And we would do another shot. And it completely calmed me down. I have to say that. And that was a big help. And I'm not promoting alcohol or anything here, but I'm just saying that it did help me. And then after the show, it was a big celebration. Like, you know, when you get the first one done, it's just like, thank you. You know, so what a relief it was.
And let's talk a little bit about people that might not know who Grady is. So Grady was Dime's tech for years and years and years. I think he was actually there when Dime was killed. How big of a deal was it to have Grady involved in this? Because at first it was announced and, you know, the estate has given their blessing.
Yeah.
But was Grady involved? Did it take a while for him to get? Can you tell me a little bit of that?
I mean, when we first started talking about this, the two people that I mentioned, and of course they mentioned to be brought back, was Grady and Sonny. Sonny was the lighting guy. Mm. Sonny just has a great pulse. You know, he's been with Pantera since like day one, basically. And if there's anybody who's going to feel how the light should be and how they should go, it should be Sonny. So Sonny was always mentioned. And then Grady was always mentioned to come back and kind of be on the production side of thing. And Grady is there and Grady's doing Dime's whammy bar for Zach. And it's just helping with the sound of Dime. And I'm so glad he's back because I've known Grady since back then too. And when I look to the left and I see Grady, that makes me feel good, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's been Dime's guy since day one. He was his left-hand man, you know? And Bobby Tongs was his right-hand man. Bobby Tongs is not here, unfortunately. I wish he was here too.
So that's important, though, to even have some of the crew guys and the whole Pantera family, so to speak, right?
Absolutely. And like I said, Sterling came out. He came out to the rehearsals and then he came out to Mexico City too. It was important that those guys are there, you know?
It really is. Because once again, like you mentioned, the celebration of the brothers, because the show starts with a nice clip of kind of Pantera back in the day. And then you mentioned Planet Caravan. You guys aren't actually playing Caravan. That's just kind of,
are
you playing it? Okay. But there's the brothers in the back with,
yep,
videos and stuff.
We show a whole video of Vinny and Dime while we play Planet Caravan. You know, when we first started doing it, it's very emotional, like playing that song. And then you look to your right and you see the videos of them up there. And it's, it got very emotional.
What was your relationship with Vinny? I mean, I know you guys were friends, but did you ever talk about drumming? Did you ever do any clinics or NAM?
Absolutely.
Tell us about that.
We would talk about drumming all the time, influences. When we were on tour together, of course, we would talk about who our favorite drummers were and things. And Vinny would always say to me, "Oh, dude, you know that lick in AIR? I kind of ripped that off." You know, he would say things like that to me, and vice versa. There's been some things. One of my favorite Vinny licks is off of the Southern Trendkill record. There's a song called War Nerve. Mm. He plays his ass off on that song. That's one of my favorite Vinny performances. And we're trying to put that song in the set list too. That's one of my favorite. One of those songs that when you hear it, there's like so many parts in it. It's a bit of a challenge, that song. But like I said, that's one of my favorite Vinny performances. You know, and then Hell Yeah, we're out on a bunch of dates we did in Asia a couple of years ago. And the Van Halen record had just come out.
The new one? Different Kind of Truth?
Different Kind of Truth. All we did was talk about that. That's all we did. And then when like we'd be getting on a plane, me and him would be going, because we loved that album. It was so good.
Stay Frosty.
And it was Stay Frosty. And the thing that we would say was like, I wish Daryl was here to hear this record. He would love it. Because it was such a Van Halen record, you know?
It's a great record. People that don't rate that record are wrong, because it is a great record.
You're right. And a lot of people slept on that record. They should really give it another chance. Don't listen to the first song. Don't let that dictate the record.
Yeah.
Because after that first song, that record is awesome.
You got to tell Zach that, because Zach didn't want to rate it either. I was like, dude, you got to listen to it. There's some solos on there that are amazing.
Yeah, he doesn't like it. He doesn't like it.
I know. He doesn't. Have you talked to him about it?
Oh, yeah.
Jeez, man. Yeah. Tell him he's wrong. If you want to be a monk, you got to eat a lot of rice.
You got to eat a lot of rice. I guarantee you, by this time next year, I will have Zach listening to that record.
Yeah, just playing the solo from Honey Baby, Lover Doll. Such a great tune, man. That's cool.
Great.
But that's the thing, and we've talked about this. When Vinny passed away, we did a big celebration of his life. But those guys just loved music and listening to music, and ZZ Top or Skynyrd or Slayer or whatever, anything in between, they were into it. And that kind of comes out in the Pantera songs themselves.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. There's a lot of Van Halen I always felt in Pantera. Even a song like New Level, there is a piece of like Loss of Control in there. You know,
good call.
Dimes Lead sometimes have a very Eddie, that's kind of Van Halen, but it's very Daryl too. So all of us, if you grew up in that time, you cannot avoid but having some of that Van Halen come out in you, you know?
Right.
There's a great nod to Van Halen in the same song, New Level, where Vinny just hits the bell of the ride, just like Alex did on Out of Love.
Yeah.
It's like, ding, ding. I always thought he did that as a nod to Alex.
I'm sure he did. And once again, the comparisons between, you know, okay, here's a brother that plays guitar and a brother that plays drums and Van Halen. Same thing with Pantera, you know?
You know, at Daryl's funeral, I'll tell the story really quick.
No, take your time.
We were sitting in the family room. It was just me and Vinny, and Rex actually came in, and Rex was sitting next to me, and Eddie Van Halen came in, and he was carrying a guitar case. And I had never met Eddie Van Halen before, and it was a very strange, I'm feeling these emotions, and then Eddie Van Halen walked in.
Right.
I was just like, oh my God, this is Eddie Van Halen right here. And he brings the guitar cases, and I can see there's a piece of tape that's so old and worn, but it says VH2. And Eddie hugs Vinny and shakes my hand and shakes Rex's hand, and he kind of squats down and opens up a guitar case, and I said, he's telling Vinny, I know this was your brother's favorite of my guitars, the black and yellow stripe. And he's like, this is the one from the back of Van Halen too. And I was like, oh my God, this is so crazy. And he's like, I want to put it in with him. I want it to be buried with him.
Oh, wow.
And I couldn't believe this. I was like, wow, what a beautiful gesture. And we walked into the other room, and Eddie placed it in there with Daryl. And I just know Daryl was so happy about that, you know?
Yeah.
And even now that I think about it, I get kind of choked up because of the way it happened. And it was just a beautiful moment that he did that.
It's like the Egyptians used to put a coin in your hand so you had something to pay the ferryman. Now Dime has a guitar to play in heaven.
Yeah. The Van Halen too.
The Van Halen too. And I remember for Vinny, and once again, it's so insane that both those dudes are gone, but I remember for Vinny's wake funeral, you played drum. Didn't you play his drums on stage?
I got up and did like a little eulogy thing, and they had his kid up there, and I just couldn't help myself but to play one of Vinny's beats on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what it's there for, you know?
Yeah.
But those guys, man, they were so, what a great brotherhood that they had, the two of them, you know?
Yeah.
You don't get that a lot anymore. And, those guys loved each other so much. Vinny would tell me after Dime passed, he's like, I don't know what to do. He was the first person I talked to every day.
Mm.
I don't think Vinny ever really recovered from Daryl's death.
I agree times a thousand, and basically had him tell me that a couple times. You know, it's funny because we just had two AEW shows, one on Saturday in Arlington, which is where the brothers were from, and then Wednesday in Garland, which is also kind of South Dallas. And both times I was there, I was like, man, every time I go to Dallas, I always think about Vinny. And like, if he was here, he'd be at the show, you know, asking for 15 tickets.
Exactly. And you know, you want to hear something weird too? Next year, the Metallica date is in Arlington, and it's the weekend of Daryl's birthday.
Wow.
Exactly.
That's huge, right? Let's talk a little about, since we're talking about the brothers, I love your kick drum heads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
If people haven't seen it, it's an amazing airbrushed painting of Daryl on one holding a shot and Vinny on the other holding a shot. What a great idea. First of all, was that your idea? And second of all, did you paint those?
No, I didn't paint them. Stephen Thompson, who does a lot of the Anthrax designing and stuff like that with me, he did them. He did such a great job. He just captured them so great. And they both are raising a shot, which was so Pantera.
Yeah.
I mean, those home videos are some of the funniest and some of the greatest things. I mean, they could cheer you up when you're having such a shit day. You watch that. It's just so much fun going
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I will say that, too. Those guys lived life to the fullest. When they were alive, they were alive, you know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, that was important to me to have because I wanted to have four kick drums. But then I didn't want to have two extra shells. I just wanted to, it's kind of a facade, but I just like the way it looked. And we have these two big cowboys from hell with the snakes going down that Phillips White's Kate designed. I didn't know she was doing that. And they didn't know that I was going to have this kind of drum design. And they didn't know that I was going to have a stainless steel drum kit. And it just all went together. Like we were all kind of in sync with each other. And the show, I mean, putting the show together and everything really came together really well, too. You know, the fire is fucking crazy. The other night, dude, we were like, oh, my God, I'm feeling this a lot tonight for some reason. That's a weird thing because we've never played with fire.
Never had that with Anthrax, with the fire?
No, we were basically on fire ourselves, you know.
Why four bass drums? Because you want to do the Alex Van Halen 1984 kit?
Got to go big. It's a total nod to Van Halen.
Completely. The only band that can get away with four kick drums.
And it's like, I want to go big with this. I want it to look like Van Halen, you know, like Pantera, you know? So why not? You know, more is more.
Exactly. And another great touch that when the show started, like, I think, where was I? Was I in Edmonton? Or I might've even been in Australia still. I was checking out the time, so I wanted to see the exact time. I looked on my phone, Googled, what time is it in Mexico? You know, what time am I now? And then as soon as the show starts, you're following along with the set. The videos start coming out. And the one thing on the big screen, there's Charlie with a big headband on,
yeah,
which was a Vinnie Paul standard. He even had the headband or the do-rag, a total homage there, obviously.
Totally. It's the total Vinnie thing. Even the shirt that I wear on stage that I designed was Vinny and Dime. It's like these years ago, I did this design with Daryl kind of as a Simpsons character for the Dean asked a few artists to do a guitar for charity. So I did the front of the guitar had a totally different design, but on the back, I never told him I was doing this. And I did this Dime Simpsons. I never even took a picture of it. That's the thing. I just gave it away. And then a friend of ours, Chad Lee, said, dude, do you have the actual? I said, no, the actual one is on the guitar because he wanted to get a tattoo of it. And then I see people coming around with tattoos of that design. So for this tour, I wanted to do Dime and Vinny on my shirt and the Simpson characters. So I don't know. I just liked it.
Fans notice this stuff. You notice it too, like Zach on stage wearing jeans. He's been wearing a kilt for a long time. He's got the Saint Dime and Saint Vinny on the back of his jacket.
Yeah.
I mean, that stuff is cool. And it once again shows that this is just a total homage and a tribute to these guys and to the music.
Absolutely. 100%. I love Zach's vest and he's getting me one of those too. I was like, oh dude, I love that. The patches are so awesome. And Zach looks cool, man.
What's your history with Zach? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you guys know each other.
I met Zach for the first time, the first day of the Ozzy tour in Pensacola, Florida in 1988,
89,
maybe.
Oh, that's right. Anthrax opened the No Rest for the Wicked tour, right? Oh, wow.
Yeah. So we had mutual friends, Mark Weiss, people like that. I remember I took a BMX out on that tour with me, and I would ride it around the arena. And the first day, the Ozzy band was doing a long sound check, and Zach was playing Hotel California note for note. And I remember stopping and just sitting on my bike and just listening to him play. I was like, dude, this dude's fucking awesome. And I always thought Zach was just a guitar player who, man, he just had his own style. Just looks so good up there when he's playing, you know, with his hair going back and forth. It's just, he's in his own. I don't think we were close throughout the years, but then I would see him and we'd talk and, you know, share this, share that. But then the tour we did with Black Label,
right?
We completely bonded. Like every day we would talk. The funny thing is the third day of the tour, I go over to Zach and I said, hey, Zach, maybe one day we'll, you know, we can jump in a room and start playing some Pantera songs. And he's like, nope, not going to happen. I'm like, uh-oh. And he's like, I still have to practice. And then that whole tour, he would call it, he was going to Pantera University. After the show, he would go in the back of the bus and just learn the songs, you know, and that's all he did.
I respect that because I know at first it's like, you know, Zach's still learning the songs, but he had a great point. Like, why would he know those songs off the top of his head? Because that's some intricate, like you mentioned, Pantera University. He mentioned he had to go on YouTube and watch some of the stuff to figure out how it goes. I mean, this is not some gig. And I go back to when we've done some of the shows, the Metal Allegiance thing, where you can't just go on stage and go, oh, I know this one. Like, no, you don't. You don't know this one.
No.
And so that's, you know, I appreciate the fact that he said, I'm not ready yet, so I'm not going to half-ass it with you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally respected that. He needed the time to kind of get them to where he felt confident enough to play them. And that was it. And that's how he did it. And he's awesome. He's killing it.
Well, and he, you know, once again, has had this experience before of coming into a band and having to play these classic leads by a little known guitar player called Randy Rhoads.
Right.
I think people kind of forgot that, like right out of the gate at 19, he's got to learn some of these most famous solos of all time and really nail it, you know?
You know, he told me something the other day that I was completely shocked. He's like, you know, I've never played Over the Mountain with Ozzy.
Really?
I'm like, what?
Wow.
He's like, yeah, never played it. Never played it with Ozzy.
Well, yeah, I guess Ozzy probably hasn't ever done that tune live, obviously, right?
Without Randy. But I don't even know if he played it with Jake.
I don't think so. I know he opened that Diary of a Madman tour with it, but I can't recall him ever playing it with anybody else.
Yeah. Flying High Again, Jack's never done it.
Really?
He said Flying High Again. Nope, never done it.
Let's talk a little bit more as we start to wind down here. You mentioned the Metallica tour. That to me is kind of like the ultimate stamp of approval. Like everything else is great, but now you get the call to open for Metallica on these stadium shows. That's going to be fucking massive. Like the other bands are great and Five Finger and all that stuff. But like if I'm going to the night that you guys are playing with them, you know?
I'm very excited. I mean, of course, we've done the big four shows, so I know how enormous this is and how enormous it's going to be. But this is going to be different because it's on the 50-yard line, and we're going to be playing in the round, which none of us have ever done that. Mm-hmm. Maybe Zach did it when he did that thing with Ozzy recently.
The football game, yeah.
But we have to really like reconfigure everything, and we have to play in the round. We have to not just play to the north, we got to play to the south too, you know? So,
yeah, right.
I mean, Metallica's, they're pros at this stuff too, and Def Leppard. But so this is going to be a learning experience. How do we do it?
I think it's also going to be kind of cool for you. I mean, you and Lars started out together. You have such a long history, and here you are coming to play with them in this whole other band. But, and you know, Lars is going to be watching you going, you know, fucking Charlie's just playing so fucking great. I can't even believe it. Have you spoken to him about this at all? Do you have that type of relationship with Lars?
I spoke to Kirk about it.
Yeah.
Because we both, our birthdays are like a couple of days apart. So we were both kind of going over birthdays and years and where did it all go and all that stuff. He just said they're super stoked about this. And like you said, they chose Pantera, which was like, wow, that's pretty fucking cool, you know? I don't take any of that for granted. I know we're all so fired up about it, and we're designing something, how we could do it, how we could reach everybody in that room, you know what I mean? So I think for a fan to come to that, that's a show, you know?
Yeah.
Wolfie opened up. It's going to be cool.
And it's one of those things that just, it's just Metallica is this way. Like, they might take Anthrax or Black Label out, but the fact that it's Pantera, it's like, this is, this goes far beyond that, you know? How big are you, do you want to, are the plans for this celebration? Are you guys going to just take it kind of leg by leg? Or are you doing a whole world tour, a whole extensive US tour? Like, what's kind of the plans?
I mean, I know 23, there's a lot going on. And then there are some Metallica dates in 24, but that's it. It's just a lot of 23 is this. And, you know, not sure how anything else is going to really fit in at this part, because Anthrax, we're still working on this record, and I'm probably going to make that in between. But there's a lot of Pantera dates in 23.
How did you approach, like, when this came to be a thing and you guys kind of were realizing it's a real deal? I'm assuming Scott being your business partner, your closest partner in the band, or everybody, but when did you tell Scott about this, and were you nervous at all, or how was kind of that reception?
I was very nervous.
Yeah, of course, right?
And they kind of beat me to the punch to tell those guys, because something came out before anything, and it's like, oh shit, I didn't even have a chance to talk to my guys, you know, and something was out there, and then I had to address it. But my guys were super pumped. They were super stoked about it. They were very, very supportive, which I was happy about. I mean, we've been together for over 40 years, so they knew, they were very close with Pantera. Mm-hmm. I think they felt the same way, that they were happy that it was me doing it. So yeah, they were very supportive.
And there's been times before, I remember even when we did Soundwave years ago, I think John Deddy was on drums. There's been a few times when if Anthrax has shows, will they play them without you if they have to?
That hasn't been talked about yet, but in Mexico City, Pantera played Friday and then Anthrax played Sunday. So I was able to do the Anthrax show.
Right.
So that worked out that way.
How was that doing double duty that weekend?
It was awesome. I loved it, actually, because when I got on the Anthrax kit, it just felt like, you know, home. You know?
Yeah.
It was great. I loved doing that. It was nice and easy.
Could you do both in the same night?
I don't know about that. I wouldn't want to do that. I don't know. I don't think it wouldn't be cool to do it. I don't think, you know?
Right.
Both are intense.
In different ways. Exactly. So last few things for you. So what is the hardest song to play in the Pantera set?
I mean, as far as the groove goes, like I said, I pull it back a lot, especially on Broken and Becoming and 5 Minutes Alone and Cowboys. Just have a nice groove that I like to pull it back a bit. And as it goes on, I'm pulling it back even more, just feeling that groove. There's parts of Vinny's playing, like I told you, that fill in walk that I wanted to get exactly right. There's the Becoming kick drum pattern that I wanted to get exactly right. Sometimes my adrenaline gets the best of me and I kind of play it a bit too fast, and then I kind of pull it back. You know, like I talk to myself, like, pull it back, Charlie, where are you going? You know, there's still
watch the beat.
Exactly. So those are the type of things, and I just like to approach it in a very Vinnie Paul way, the way he would approach a fill, you know, pull it back. And there it is.
The kick drum part of Becoming always didn't make sense to me. Like, I'm not a drummer, but I'm a musician, and it just always seemed like there was an extra little throwing a can with a rock in it down a flight of stairs. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah.
That seems that would be harder to play properly.
I always loved the end part of that. It was like tap dancing to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was learning how to play that part, I thought it was more than what it was. So I was approaching it in a very, and then a drummer friend of mine, Thomas Lang, I was asking him, like, how would you approach it? And he's like, dude, it's not all that. It's just, It's simple. Bump, 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 bump. Right, left, two rights. You know, it's like,
oh, wow.
What? You know, but the way it sits, it's so awesome. It's just such a great part that he came up with. You
know? I can see him laughing. Hey, Charles, that's a tough one, isn't it, motherfucker? Got you on that one.
He would tell me, too, that he's like, after the first tour, Far Beyond Driven, he's like, dude, I couldn't play it anymore. So he's like, he was having problems with it because it was a mental thing. He said, I wasn't playing it the way I originally played it. So he would play it a different way. I can't hear things like that or else it'll fuck me up mentally. You know?
Well, that's what Lars does on One now. You know, you just kind of transpose over the years and create these fucking crazy parts. And then realize as you, you know, like you said, they're not easy to do, especially night after night after night.
Yeah, exactly. And mentally, if you, it's like a pitcher. If you're off, man, you kind of have to get it back at some point. You know, you just get into this slump. But thank God, I'm going to knock on wood, hasn't happened.
What's your favorite song to play live so far with them?
Dude, I love playing all of them. Like I said early on, when I look at the set list and then I see this song's coming up, I get so pumped up. Oh, I love this song.
Yeah.
One of my favorite songs that they have is that song, Use My Third Arm. I just love the drumming in it. Ah, it's just a killer song. It's so aggressive. So that's one of my favorites. And the last song of the set, Cowboys from Hell, I love the shit out of that song.
It's still like, I don't know, man, it's hard. New Level's great, Becoming's great, but Cowboy is still the one for me. If you said to me, give me one line of a Pantera song that sums up the whole band, and it's that, we're taking over this town. I just love that. Like, it's just so like, let's take over the town.
Because I know when that intro starts and there's that loop, you know, gets me excited. And then Zach will play the riff and then we all come in. It's just like, there it is. And you just look out in the crowd and they're just having such a great time. And it's like, yeah, there it is. That's what it's all about right there.
That's right. Last question for you. Do you have a favorite story about Dime and Vinny that you remember from over the years?
Oh God, I have too many of them. I mean, Daryl, every day was another story. The last time I saw Daryl was at in Chicago, actually, and they were doing some Hell Yeah dates. No, not Hell Yeah. They were doing Damage Plan dates. It was at the House of Blues, and afterwards we had this great party, and we went downstairs to where the jazz band sets up. I got behind the kit, and Daryl was just behind me going absolutely apeshit. And it was just such a great – if I knew that was going to be the last time that I saw him, I was – so happy about it because we had such a great time. And then the next day he called me up. He's like, dude, I haven't had a time like that in so long. And he was just so happy about it. And, you know, Rita told me that weeks later too, you know, cause he died about a week and a half after that.
Yeah.
And she was just saying how happy he was that night. And that to me was the greatest.
Yeah.
But Vinny was always Vinny. And the one thing about Vinny, like I said, when we were in Asia doing those shows and we hung out a lot on that run, you know, we would talk and we would bond over that Van Halen record and taking the bullet train to Osaka. Both of us were sitting there listening to it and just rocking out. These are the things that I remember, those type of moments, you know, and yeah, man, I miss those guys a lot.
Yeah. I got a video from Vinny. The Winnipeg Jets were playing the Las Vegas Knights in the playoffs, and the Knights eliminated the Jets. It was the final four. And he was in his pool with a drink, and he's like, hey, motherfucker, you guys almost did it, but the good guys won. And that's the video he said. And I had that. And like you said, 2 weeks later, he's gone. But like Vinny Paul in his pool, talking hockey with a shot of whatever he was drinking, doesn't get much better than that, you know?
No, I told Rex a story too, like a couple of weeks ago. I said, dude, because Vinny lived up the hill from Rex.
Okay, yeah.
And he had this golf cart. And I was at Vinny's house. And he's like, hey, man, let's go take a ride down to Rex's house. So I'm like, okay. So I thought we were going to get in this car. We got into the golf cart. And we're driving down this hill at full speed. And Rex had just had all of his like landscaping done. He had these new flowers, and fucking Vinny just ran over all of them. And the next day, Rex is like, "What the fuck, man? I just had all this shit done. It cost me an arm and a leg." And he would tell me, he's like, "Dude, he would pull that shit all the time, wrecking my garden." So I don't know. Just funny shit.
Yeah. Well, dude, like I said, congratulations on putting together something very special. I think Vinny and Dime be very proud of it. And it's great to see you doing so well. It's great to talk to you, man.
Yeah, I miss you.
Yeah, I miss you too, buddy. I'll see you soon, and congratulations, and great job so far.
Awesome. Thanks, Chris. And safe travels, and I'll see you soon. Happy holidays to you and your family.
Same to you, buddy. Talk to you soon, man.
All right, bro. Bye.